evening, everyone. This is Gordon W2, Tango, Tango, Tango. And this is the Barra TechNet. The TechNet is held every Thursday night at 9 p.m. on 146.955, the repeater of the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club, located in Alpine, New Jersey. The PL is 141.3. The tone is 141.3, or 4A, Motorola parlance. We hope you'll join us tonight. Is there any emergency or priority traffic? Okay, nothing heard. The next step is, how do we check into this net? What's the purpose of this net? The purpose of this net is a technical discussion of anything related to amateur radio, electronics, telecommunications, computing, and things in our society that depend on those things. So pretty much you can talk about anything you want if you just have a little bit of an imagination and how you approach it. And we encourage you to do so. You do not need to be a member of the Bergen Amateur Radio Association in order to participate in the net. You do, however, need to have a valid amateur radio license that allows you to operate in the 2-meter amateur radio band. We also have access to this repeater via Echolink, and we encourage stations to check in via Echolink as well. That is using Kilo 2 Foxtrot Juliet dash L, or Link. Kilo 2 Foxtrot Juliet Link, or dash L, using Echolink. And we will leave breaks for that. Are there any Echolink stations at this time? Alrighty. The way we check into this net is by giving our call sign, our name, and then we indicate whether we have a question, a comment, both, or none of the above. And we do encourage people with none of the above to check in as well, because it helps us focus our attention to what your needs may be, even if you don't know what they are. We can kind of tell by knowing who's there how we should approach a discussion. And so you're our audience, so please check in. Again, even if you don't have a question, please check in. Alrighty, so let's begin. Any station whose call sign begins with the letter A or Alpha, please call K2 Bravo Alpha Romeo with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question, comment, both, or none of the above. Please call K2 BAR. Okay, let's try the ever popular Novembers. Okay, let's try the ever-popular Kilos.
KO2, okay.
No questions, none of the above, but listening right now.
Hey, I have Bennett, and I don't know if you have any questions or comments. And I heard Tony, K2AMI, he has no questions or comments. I got that. So, Bennett, what's your pleasure?
Good evening, Gordon. KO2, okay. No questions, no comments at this time.
Very much. Any other Kilos?
K2 BAR, this is KC2 SAV. No questions, no comments.
Al, good evening to you. Any other Kilos?
This is KC2 SQ2. No questions, no comments.
Stuart, gotcha. KC2SQP, gotcha there. Any other Kilos?
K2GSL, David, no questions, no comments.
Okay, any other Kilos? I got David. Any other Kilos? Any whiskey stations?
W2JEK, done, no questions.
Good evening, Donald. And any other questions? Any other whiskeys?
WE2R, Charlie, with a question.
Hey, Charlie, good evening to you. I noted that you have a question. Please note that W2TTT has a question as well. I'm actually going to take the liberty of asking mine first, but I think it's a quickie question, so we'll get to that in a minute. Any other whiskeys? Alrighty. Any other call signs? Any call signs that are late checking in? Please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name. Whether you have a question or comment, both or none of the above, please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, Mr. K, no question at this point. Jim.
K2BAR, this is KC2PYB. No questions or comments at this time.
Hey, I got Jim and I got Richard. Good evening to you both. Any other stations? Alrighty, well, let's get to it. My question is real simple. I have a little Sirius radio that runs on 5 volts, and I'm pumping 12 volts into a regulator, and the 3-terminal regulator, it's a standard tab-type regulator. It's sitting on a very sizable piece of aluminum, maybe about 3 inches long, about maybe, it's a piece of like 3/16 gauge L channel, you know, maybe about 3 inches long, and it's bolted to it nice and firmly. And after about 15 minutes or so, it overheats and it's dropping too much voltage, and you know how that is. So I was looking for strategies to take my 12 volt line, and I still need to deliver about an amp and maybe more, and that may be the other problem too. I don't think it's an amp, but it, you know, conceivably it could be. So one of the thoughts I had for dealing with this is, A, to find a way to do a voltage drop that's sensible, and how best to do that, because they only have a bunch of quarter-watt resistors around here, so that's not good. And the other approach is to take two of the 3-terminal regulators and just strap them together and give them each their own heat sink, but put them in parallel so they can kind of distribute the load. Has anyone tried putting them in parallel before, or has anyone got any really easy techniques for dropping the voltage from 12 to something a little less, should we say, challenging to the 3-terminal 5-volt regulator? Any thoughts from anybody?
K2ZO.
And James checks in. Good evening, James. Are you commenting, or are you checking in or both?
Thought I had already checked in.
I didn't get you, but okay. I got you. No problem. Do you have a question or comment, or are you just answering my question?
My question is, what kind of 3-terminal regulator are you using?
The little tab kind, you know, a little stinky little, you know, 7805 type.
Well, they're not rated for what you're doing. You need the larger series, you know, like in the big can. They do make one, you know.
Alas, but they were not available. So my question is still fundamental. Is there a way to drop the voltage a little bit, and or can I parallel them?
Well, you can the problem is you're still delivering more than an amp. That's the problem. If you were delivering less than an amp and it was getting hot, you could put a series resistor to the 3-terminal regulator and therefore not drop as much across it. But the problem is that you're overrating the thing. Why don't you just take the 3-terminal regulator and wrap a 3055 around it?
Oh, use a 3055 as a pass transistor?
Just use that to drive it. You could put two in series, but remember, you're going to have to put a small resistor, tenth of an ohm, in series with each leg, which will work.
Parallel, actually.
Yeah, I was about to say. So, I put a small 10 ohm resistor in series with the input and output leg?
Oh, I said a tenth of an ohm.
Tenth of an ohm. Ah, I might have that. I'll see. So the question is, the answer to my question is, you need to have a small balancing resistor, about a tenth of an ohm, on the input and output legs, in series with them, I guess, right?
On the output.
Okay, that's even easier. Alrighty. So, yeah, you can parallel them. Yes, you need a tenth of an ohm resistor on each one. Okay. That's good. And the other approach is to use a 2N3055 pass transistor.
or what is it, the something 38 series, which is a 5 amp. You know, it's in a little bigger package, and that will work fine.
Yeah, but unfortunately, my resources are somewhat constrained by local access. I can't think of a local supplier of that stuff.
Did you try Wayne Electronics? AJ4WD?
Rachel, you know what? I didn't, and I should have. That's a good idea. I'll add you into the roster. AJ4 Whiskey Delta. Okay? And that's a good idea, too. Time permits me to get out there, but okay. That's good. Any other solutions?
NS2K.
James?
Well, don't forget, you're at 1 amp, you're dissipating like 8 watts. And if it's more, it's even more watts. But obviously you need a big enough heat sink to accommodate all that, regardless of what the pass device is, or you parallel them or whatever. And I don't know, I would be inclined to put them both on the same even more substantial heat sink so that they thermally tracked. You don't want one getting substantially hotter than the other, or the point ones may not be enough to accommodate the difference. Anyway, yeah, they'll go a long way to balancing them, but they need to be about the same temperature as well, especially if you use a pass transistor, except you're only going to use one pass transistor. Anyway, put them on the same big heat sink.
I can make the heat sink larger, and I can also make it bigger, so that's all good. Not a problem. And yeah, I get the thermal tracking issue. Not a problem. Good. Any other ideas?
About a string of diodes.
You know, I thought of that. I went looking around to see what I had. At 0.7 a pop, absolutely. Just bring it down to about 6.5 volts and call it square.
A string of 154.08s, and then on the other side, a bunch of them just to prevent any, you know, polarity or something like that, and that'll work.
I like that. I'll go check my junk box to see if I have some stuff like that. I might actually have like some 1 amp PIV, you know, 1 amp 50 PIV or 2 amp 50 PIV diodes would be perfect for that. Okie doke. Anything else from anybody?
If you had like a 4 ohm, whatever, 5 or 10 watt resistor, you might put it in series.
But alas, I don't. That was a good thought, Jim, though. That was NS2K's comment. Who was the other station who doubled with him and lost? I got NS2K's comment. Who was the other station?
W2KBF checking in.
Hey, Carl. Alrighty. We're talking about ways to, shall we say, keep happy a 5-volt regulator pulling just about an amp and hammering down a 12-volt source. So we're examining ways to do that, creatively and otherwise. Alrighty. Carl, do you have a question or comment for the net?
No, not at all. Just reading the mail. W2KBF back to net.
Outstanding check-in list tonight. I want to emphasize that already. Really do. Really good. There are 13 of us and counting. Anybody else have any more on this topic?
KC2, VRY, checking in.
Make that 14. Hi, Jim. KC2, VRY, do you have a question or comment for the net?
Yes. Rachel helped me figure out how to program a FM station into my frequency radio, and it's sort of working, but I don't know if we nailed it down yet.
come back to that. We have one more question, and we're going to finish this one. We have another question, and we'll come to that.
That's good.
Excellent. All right. Any more questions on this topic?
Hey.
Comments on the topic? I think I double with somebody. Sega.
AJ4WG, comment.
Go ahead, Rachel.
Your heat sink, does it have fins on it so that you have more surface area to dissipate the heat?
It's a piece of like 3/4 inch L-channel that's heavy gauge. It's probably like 3/16 thick L-channel, about 3 inches long. So the short answer to your question is no, but it does have a lot of heat dissipation capability. I'm going to take Jim's advice, and if I do use two regulators, I will put them on the same heatsink and make it even bigger. I'll probably use two pieces back to back, bolt them together, so that I get even more of a heatsink, kind of along like a steroidal version of what you're kind of suggesting. All right. Anybody else? Okie dokie. Well, thank you, everybody. That's excellent. Charlie, it's your question.
Okay, Gordon, thank you. This is WE2R. Simple question. Has anybody used, or is there any reason why I can't use heavy test fishing line monofilament to support a wire antenna? I wonder if anybody has had any experience with that. The reason I would do that is it's less visible. But I wonder if it would stand up to, you know, whatever stresses are on it. Back to net. This is WE2R.
Personally, I think you should use half-inch retroreflective line and make sure they see it, but that's just me. Alrighty, anybody have any comments about this one?
Is this for a permanent antenna, K2ZO?
Well, sort of, as long as it stands up. Permanent until it falls down.
Actually, the later stuff that they make now would do it. However, when you go to the store, don't ask for fishing line. Ask for leap, okay? Because if you go and ask for fishing line, as someone I know did, they said, no, we don't make stuff that heavy in fishing line. And what you need is what they call leader line, which, of course, you can buy up to a tensile strength of 110 or even higher than that.
Okay, Jim. I hadn't thought of that, and I should know that as a fisherman, a leader. And the object of it is it's going across the sidewalk to a tree, and that's why I just prefer that it be less visible. But that's good. Leader is, and I probably wouldn't really have to buy a huge roll of it either.
Question?
Go ahead, Rachel.
What about UVA, UVB? Is that going to break down the leader line? Or has that got some properties built into it to be resistant to the elements of the sun beating on it?
If you look at it under UV light, it fluoresces, and that is because they do use a UV absorber in the line.
Thank you, Jim.
K2BAR, this is KC2PYB.
Go ahead, Richard.
So first of all, to the fisherman, you know that weight is going to stretch. You get braid, it's about 100 pounds of braid, very thin.
Okay, what I was going to ask is, number one, is this a public sidewalk? Number two, how high up is it? And number three, who's his insurance company?
Charlie, I think Richard's trying to send you some advice.
Yes, that's a consideration, and that may dictate where I actually anchor the end of the antenna. I might depending on how it works out, keep it on the property. In any case, I still want it to be less visible.
Yeah, except that safety regulations require that you mark your guidelines so that people don't get hurt, and that regulations also require that if your antenna falls, it falls on your property and not across public sidewalks or onto your neighbor's property.
Good advice, and I will consider that. Thank you.
Apart from the transiting the sidewalk issue, which I think is pretty clear, if you had it high enough such that first of all, short enough so that the wire doesn't come anywhere near the sidewalk, but that the fishing line finishes your lawn, if you will, comes across the sidewalk, and then enters the tree space. Potentially, if that line broke, it would probably just drag the whole thing back onto the lawn. If it broke at the junction, it would the fishing line would remain in the tree, and the wire would remain on your lawn. So, you know, think about different failure modes if you even thinking about doing that for a temporary thing. And, by the way, if there's power on your side of the street, forget it. The answer is no. Not no the way Richard said no. I mean no.
Well, what do you mean by power? Yeah, I mean there's power, but it's not where the antenna would be.
Let me ask a question. Okay. So this antenna is not going to be perpendicular to a power line and coming to a tree that is also near the power lines, right?
No, it would not be perpendicular. It would be parallel. I have no desire to mess with the power lines or anything near them.
Okay. Well, take Richard's advice and go from there. I don't think my advice applies, which is good.
W2KBS with a question.
Dr. Carl.
Yeah, the question is, do you have squirrels in your neighborhood? Because I've never been able to keep up anything that doesn't use copper wire because the squirrels bite through everything.
Yes, I think we all have squirrels. I never heard of that, but I haven't had any problem with other antennas in the back with squirrels, but I would hope they would leave my antenna alone. They certainly caused me enough misery elsewhere.
Yeah, it's just a thought regarding the nylon or whatever fishing line. That's what they would go after. They tend to get my cords. They tend to get anything that's not metal in my environment. Anyway, just a thought, W2KBF.
What about some sort of, you know, high strength like aramid cable? You know, that might be a good idea. You know, Kevlar cord, things like that. It would certainly be more visible, but it would also be more sturdy, Carl.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm prepared to put up Kevlar for the squirrels. I just use copper antenna wire, you know, an antenna insulator, and then finish it off with copper antenna wire. And the varmints don't seem to bite through that.
Yeah, I've never had that problem, but now that I think about it, all my wire antennas are terminated on metal poles, so they don't have access. All my antennas are treeless, if you will. So that's interesting. Okay. Very good. Anybody else?
K2BAR, this is KC2PYB again.
Hey, Richard.
On this particular issue, I would just ask Carl to think of this, since he wants to go across a public sidewalk. That fishing line breaks, but it doesn't break on the tree side. It breaks on his antenna side because some squirrel is walking across it, or excuse me, for whatever reason the wind snaps it or whatever. And since it can't be seen and it's a public sidewalk, and as this guillotine is coming across, the flying across the sidewalk, and some little kid is down on the sidewalk, and it suddenly slaps him in the face and cuts his face. When his doorbell rings, they're not going to ask for the insurance company as the police officer asks him to please step outside. And is that his fishing line on that tree? They're going to ask more for, do you have a lawyer? And it's not worth it. I would seriously, take a good look at the regulations and the technician's manual for ARRL licensing, review those, and then come up with Plan B. This is not a good plan. I don't care whether you have Kevlar up there or anything, because what the people are saying is, well, you know, squirrels get into these things, birds get into these things, and no matter how invisible you think it is, kids are going to get into these things. And eventually, you're going to have a doorbell ring with a police officer standing on the other side of your door. Over.
I think I'm going to amend my previous comments to agree fully with Richard. If it's not fully monitored, you can't do it. And at 24/7, I mean, it's different when you're portable, you know, and sitting underneath it with your station, you're watching the thing. But this is going to live there day in and day out, unattended, all that good stuff. Yeah, you can't do this.
To JK.
Mr. Don?
Yeah, I mean, whatever type of line you do use, I would suggest definitely stay away from the sidewalk. Matter of fact, the town DPW guys see anything in the tree. I know it's pretty near invisible, but if they see something there, they'll pay to take it out, I'm sure. And but if you have a tree on your own property, you can, in other words, between the sidewalk and your house, use that tree that's between the sidewalk and your house. It's on your property. That way, if it does fall, it's on your property. Also, one thought I had in mind is that the if the tree sways in the wind, you'll have to have something, some kind of an arrangement that prevents the antenna from snapping in the wind when the wind blows. In some cases, I've used a pulley with a counterweight, so that the tree moved, the counterweight would go up and down and keep the tension on the antenna. And you can't really have that hanging out by your tree by your curbside, or right on your tree in your yard maybe, but or have some other kind of an arrangement to handle the tension issue there. Back to net, W2JK.
Yeah, whatever you do for that counterweight, make sure that that should something break, it won't fall, and have a redundant, maybe double or triple redundant restraint system so that that thing can't fall, or have it such that its resting location is, shall we say, you know, at knee level or hip level or something, so that, you know, it can't fall and clock somebody in the head.
Okay, do I have it?
Go ahead, Charlie.
Yeah, okay, well, thank you. Well, I think you talked me out of it. I think I'm going to go to Plan B, which is similar to Plan A, but doesn't cross the sidewalk. So thanks all for those comments, and that's what I'll do. Go to Plan B. This is WE2R. Back to Nick.
Okey-doke. Well, I'm just looking at my list of available resistors here, and man, it's really, really kind of minimal. Actually, I have a good assortment, a couple of each, but I have 5 2.2 ohm resistors. I ain't gonna quite cut it. That's the smallest resistor I have. Oh, I have some ones. I have some 1 ohm resistors, so I can put 10 of them parallel and get that 10th ohm. Ah, dear me. Oh well. They're really tiny too. I think they're quarter watt resistors, maybe 8th watt. So, oh well. I guess I'm going to have to go find a new plan to make this work. W2TTT.
W2KBF will have more comment about Plan B.
Let's do that.
Okay, one of my neighbors, N2ST, had an 80-meter dipole where one leg of it went out to a tree in front of his house. And the burro came along and trimmed the tree. It ruined his mast and did some other stuff, too. So that's the other problem with going out to public spaces. You never know what the tree trimmers are going to do in your neighborhood. W2KBF.
You know, I would imagine they were somewhat indifferent. So let's hold on.
Yep. I just pulled my radio off my desk here. We're in the process of changing some stuff up here on my desk upstairs, and some things are not secured where they need to be, and I reached down and grabbed something, and down came the radio with me. Anyway, yeah, I think you're right, Carl. My gut feeling is the tree trimmer saw it and said, we're just going to pull on it and see what happens. Alrighty. Anybody else with a comment about antenna placement?
Yeah, it works good behind my back, NZ2K. 20-meter isotron, worked 15 different countries this weekend, NZ2K, Hillsdale.
Wow, another check-in tonight. Good evening. Alrighty. NZ2K, do you have any other further questions or comments later on in the net?
Nope. Just got done doing some stuff and running around. Figured I'd grab the HT instead of getting on Echo Link, and you guys carry on listening about antennas and all that other stuff. And I'm just at the adage, if you put it up and try it and it works, then you're much better off than not having anything at all. I'm tickled pink with the indoor antenna I'm running at the location where it is, too. Back to you. I hope you're getting your lathe ready and your metal working going. If not, we can head out to the city to find another fire escape. NZ2K.
Oh, my. Alrighty. Well, very good. Any more on antenna placement from anybody else or any other check-ins? Paul, that was a good comment. Alright. Let's see. Charlie, do you want to say anything more? W2RW2TTTKTBAR.
No, just thank you, everybody. And, I have another plan. Similar, but it won't cross the sidewalk. So anyway, thanks. This is WE2R.
I'm going to give you my solution that I had to deal with because I have a limited space issue and I wanted an 80 and 40 antenna. And I would assume with a little more space, the same thing could apply to an 80, 40, 160 antenna. Alpha Delta makes a trap dipole called a DXDD, Delta Delta, which for a whole lot of reasons I ended up buying one day because, frankly, I left an antenna home and left the antenna tuner home, and so I needed an antenna that I could just throw up and have it immediately work where I was going, because I bought it en route. It was the least cost solution to what I needed with the least amount of grief. In any case, when it came home, it sat here for a while, and then I put it up. I have a 35-foot tower and mast in the back of my lot. I have a short pole at the center peak of my house on the north end. And then, not quite collinear, but almost collinear, the other leg goes to my front yard and down to a flagpole. It's in the middle of my yard, I'm out of my front yard. And so it gives me a sloper to the east or southeast, and it gives me a flat line to the northwest. But it's a good dipole. It works on 80 and 40 very well. And it's very, very rigid, very heavy cable, good traps, I think it's number 10 or number 12, hard-drawn copper. It's very, very good. It has not flexed, broken, or anything in, I don't know, 4 or 5 years now. So I'm very, very lucky, and that's what I use here for my 8040, my primary 8040 antenna. I also have a 40-meter Envis antenna that goes from about 12 feet to the feed point down to about 8 feet on the sides, on one side, and actually about 4 feet on the other. And it's actually bent along the back side of my property. So that's another solution, too. Oh, yeah, just keep that in mind that you may want multiple wires. All righty, anything else? Okay, very good. Thank you, Charlie, for your question. And Jim, KC2VRY, you want to elaborate on your question, sir? K2VAR.
Yes, thank you, KC2VRY. The other night at the kit night, I was talking to Rachel, and she helped me to figure out how to program the computer tone into my radio, and it made a little sense, and it worked, but I made contact, and somebody said there's a lot of background noise in it. I'm wondering what I could do to eliminate that.
Are you using that radio now?
No, I'm not on that radio right now.
Was the tone 141.3?
I don't recall. It may be 146.2, if I remember.
Okay, well, if you want to grab the radio, dial up this repeater, enable tone, put the T on, and then set the tone to 141.3. We could try listening for it here for you.
Okay, this is the FM repeater for the... What is that, the K2RX repeater system in New York?
Well, that very well may be, but what I'm suggesting is that you program it, you know, just dial up the VFO and set it up to for this repeater in the VFO mode. You don't have to save it in the memory or anything. And let's just see how it sounds here. And if you fail to communicate using that radio, you still have the radio you're on.
Yeah. Okay, what do you want me to do first?
Set the frequency to 146.955. Set the tone to 141.3. And make sure your offset's minus.
He has an HF radio.
Oh. Oh, that could be a problem.
I understand that now.
Okay. Hold on for a second. Let me quote a wise man with yellow hair. Don't! And now that we've had that epiphany. All right, Jim, what kind of radio is it? What frequency did you try to set it to? I guess you tried to set it for 10 meters. Is that what's going on?
That's correct. It's a Yaesu FT450. And I tried to link it. The repeater in the Empire State Building is 446225, I believe. And that's linked into an FM repeater upstate, which operates on 29.60. And I did everything according to the book, and it drops down to 29.50, which is supposed to be the transmit frequency. And they're saying there's background noise, and I'm wondering why.
Turn down the mic game.
That certainly could be it. Were you able to transmit on 440 and hear yourself back on 10 meters? Vice versa?
Comment.
I'm sorry, say again?
Comment.
Bad comment.
Did he say 29600 he was transmitting on? NZ2K with a 100 kilohertz offset?
Did say that, well, he said that he was transmitted, that the repeater transmitted on 29.6. He didn't say where he was.
Okay. 29.600 is the national simplex calling frequency. There is no offset to that.
Right. That makes sense. So what could be going on here is that they have a 440 repeater with a 28 or 29 megahertz FM remote phase.
This is 29.620.
Ah, there we go. 29.62. Now we're cooking.
Wonder if he shut the input off to the repeater or something. Sometimes they do that.
Okay. Let's get a couple other things going here.
Whoopsie,
that radio is getting to be a little annoying. I'm using a different radio tonight. And I keep sending it flying. All right, let's try that again. So, 29.62. Now, just for grins, I'm listening there now, and I don't hear anything. So, oh, there we go. Somebody keyed something up.
Connected K2ZC.
Ends at 2K.
Yeah, ends at 2K go.
Yeah, that whole system, from time to time, they shut off receivers and stuff like that. That's just maybe he was working on a receiver and that might have been a problem. And Gordon, did you hear who connected to Echolink really quick?
I didn't. I was going to ask. Who just connected to Echolink? Oh, well. Jim, real quick, what's the 440 frequency and what's the PL up there? I think you said 146.2?
It's 446.225.
And it was K2 Zulu Charlie on the, I think, on the Echolink.
K2 Zulu Charlie, K2BAR.
Airing and stuff there. I know KQ2H has got a repeater, by the way, on 224.800. It transmits, but it doesn't receive. There's no receiver in there, so sometimes this stuff happens. Back to net from NZ2K, and we'll see if the Echolink station wants to come in on your key there, Gordon.
This is Kilo 2 Zulu Charlie. I'm listening on Echolink, but I don't have a mic on my computer, so I'm transmitting on my computer with Kilo 2 Zulu Charlie.
Very nice, Dave. Welcome aboard. Good, good. I'll make a note that you're on Echolink, sort of, kind of, as well as RF. I'm listening there. Occasionally I am hearing somebody key it up. I can't key the 440 side up because I only have an HD handy on 440 right now here in the shack. So if someone else with a more robust signal knows the PL for 446.225, that might be good as well. Oh, well. Alrighty. So I think we have, I think we've sort of addressed that question, at least partially. Any other further questions or comments about this matter? Jim, can you transmit on 2962 simplex and just make a transmission there with FM and see if I can hear you?
I would have to change it. It's set up with the tone now for 146.2 minus, and it drops down to 2952 when I key the mic.
No worries. I'll listen on 2952. Go ahead. Key it up. There's some vague noise there.
Heard noise there?
I heard what I thought was a transmission. It was very weak, though. Just barely breaking the noise level. It was not copyable. Try it again. I just tuned up a bit. Yeah, it's really weak. Okay. All right, well, something worth considering anyway in the future. Hey, a bunch of us will get our FM verticals going on 10 meters. That'd be fun. It's that time of the year, start thinking about putting a 10-meter vertical up. Everybody think you went back to CB and gave up ham radio. Any other comments, please call K2BAR.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions, comments, check-ins with the net?
Have an SWR meter hooked up outside the radio, and that jumps up to 3. Now, is there a difference here?
I missed that a little bit, but yeah, sure. What's happening is that the SWR that's being presented by your antenna and feed system is 3:1, which then the tuner that's built into the FT450 is matching to give the final amplifier a 1:1 match.
That's normal then.
Yeah, it's certainly within limits. Yeah, sure. I mean, your antenna is not perfectly resonant, but the tuner is kind of handling that mess. So you have some modest inefficiency. It's not the end of the world.
Probably your finals are more sensitive to the problem than your than the actual performance of the antenna. It really matters. But that overall, that's pretty good. I mean, you can always make it better.
The radio has an automatic tuner. Hit that, and it tunes in. So, you know, I don't know what's going on here.
Well, what it's doing is it's taking the 3-to-1 SWR of your antenna and feed system and making it look like 1-to-1 to your transmitter.
I got you.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's some inefficiency there, but it's keeping your finals happy and allowing you to transmit maximum power, even if it's not as efficiently used as it otherwise could be. At least it's not rolling back or damaging your finals, so, well, that's good. All righty, any more? All righty. I didn't think I'd be dialing up 10-meter FM tonight. That's kind of a little bit of fun. And so let's see, what else? What else do we want to discuss? Anybody have any other questions for that before we go to comments and announcements?
WE2R.
Yes, sir. It's Charlie.
A quick question, Gordon. What Alpha Delta antenna did you say you had?
DXDD. Delta X-ray hyphen Delta Delta. It's 100 feet long, does 80 and 40.
Okay, I just asked because I have a Alpha Delta and twin swoper, so still in the plastic bag it came in. I just wondered if that was the same antenna. It's not. Okay, thanks. This is going to go up one day.
Yeah, I mean, they make a quality antenna. I really can't complain. It kind of galled me to spend that much money on an antenna that I could just as easily build with or without the traps. But I was somewhat philosophical about it in that I was able to repurpose the purchase on my lot due to the unusual constraints. I mean, all things being equal, I'd rather have a 40-meter dipole than an 80-meter dipole. I have a 100-foot lot with power lines on my side of the street, a line drop on one side of my house, so this antenna is way away from that. Way away. I don't want any issues, legal or otherwise, thank you. If it collapses, it will not collapse anywhere near the power line. If the power line collapses, it will not collapse anywhere near it. That's already been worked out. And what else? Anyway, so that's pretty much the game. So I'm basically happy with it. I can't complain. It's not an antenna I want to take to a portable operation because it would be folded up and taken down, folded up and, you know, rolled out, taken down, and stuff like that. And I just think that, you know, rigid wire should not be endlessly folded up and then put, you know, roll back out, fold it up, roll back up. You know, just set it up, leave it alone, be happy. And I am, and it's been there for like 5 years, and I am happy. Maybe more than 5 years at this point. So anyway, all is good. Anybody have any more?
K2AMI with a battery question.
Okay. Mr. Tony, your battery question.
I have a 3.6-volt 700 milliamp lithium ion battery, and it doesn't seem to want to take the charge from the supplied charger. Does anybody know any way to get this battery to reactivate itself?
Case, why is that battery fully discharged?
Yeah, it's fully discharged.
So are we looking at a damaged battery?
Not to my knowledge. It's just been a battery that hasn't been used in a considerable length of time, maybe a year, and it is just totally discharged. Apparently lithium-ion batteries steadily discharge themselves if you don't use them.
Yep, and so you have that problem.
And are you sure you're putting it in the charger for which it's intended to be charged?
Yes. Yes, I am.
I hated to ask that question, by the way, but I had to ask.
Well, I don't know. Are you sure that the charger's putting out?
Yes, I can measure the voltage on the charger. It's there.
How old is the battery?
How old is the battery, I think, is the question. I would say 2 years.
Because they're usually only good for 250 cycles of charging and discharging. It may have overextended its life expectancy.
In no way have I attempted to recharge and charge this over 250 times. It's a radio that I don't often use, and I was scrounging around, as you know, for the auction, and I recovered the radio, and I said, let's see if I can do with it, and it just won't come back to me. It requires, in my mind, to purchase a new battery.
So you're going to get an extra capacity battery, right?
Well, again, it's a limited use battery. I don't need extra capacity. I just need extra life.
The thing is, if you're going to buy a new battery, you're going to buy something a little chunkier than the original one.
I don't think I would. Again, a chunkier battery would give me extended use while I'm using it. My problem is long periods of non-use.
Right. No, I understand. I was thinking that you might want the... If you're going to spend the money, you might as well get some extra runtime out of the new battery for a few more dollars, you know? But if the form factor becomes more of a nuisance in a extended life pack, then, or extended capacity pack, then I can see buying a factory replacement for the original.
Comment?
Can I comment?
Tony, what is the supposed voltage of the battery? Is it really only 2.7 volts?
It's 3.6 volts. 3.6. It says 3.6 at 700 milliamps.
Okay, so, and it's a lithium-ion battery, right?
Right, right.
Okay, with that voltage, then it has to be two cells. Agreed?
Agreed.
Okay, if every one of the lithium-ion batteries that I've taken apart, even the tiny little one for my camera, has a little chip in there that divides it up. Because you cannot charge them by just stringing them in series like you can with other batteries, they have a rather sophisticated built-in charging system. And even that tiny little battery in my camera, when I opened it up, I always get curious with these things, has three little chips for each one of the cells. If they go, you're dead. That's what happened on my laptop.
Yeah, Johnny.
I'm looking for a shocking technique to excite this battery. Is there such a thing?
Only if you're wearing a flak jacket.
Put it across 110 for just a short time.
Sick.
Is that a St. Patrick's Day joke, or is that an experiment?
I saw you do that with your lawnmower battery.
It didn't work.
No. How
fast did the lawnmower go?
It was a weed whacker, and the weed whacker made wonderful smoke.
Yeah, you're lucky to have something go bang. It's like how many of us have had the honor and pleasure of a even a small electrolytic, let alone a big one, go up. It's not pretty.
Hey, if I can just terminate that question and ask one more thing. I'm just scrounging now, but does anybody in their tube capacity? I know Dave has got tubes around, but I'm looking for 16BE6 and 16BA6, 50-year-old tubes. If anybody's got something like that and would like to find a new home for it, please contact me. 6BE6 and a 6BA6.
I'll check the garage tomorrow.
What was the first number?
6 Baker Easy 6. Baker Easy 6. Or Baker Able 6. The second one.
But the answer was 6. Okay. All right, very good. 6 Bravo Alpha 6. 6 Bravo Echo 6. Yeah. I don't think I have those anymore. I haven't done any tubes anymore except for the odd CRT. Alrighty. Anything else for joy and happiness? A announcement. Let's see. Next test session for Barra is, what, a week from tomorrow. Is that correct?
Correct. I'm going for my general. Give it a shot.
Mr. Don, you want to say a few words?
This is W2JEK, yeah. Okay. Next test session will be Friday the 19th, a week from tomorrow, 7 p.m. at the high school, class of 123. If you're upgrading, please bring your original license and a copy of that license. If you don't have a license yet, we'll need your Social Security number. And in either case, you'll need some kind of ID, either one form of a photo ID, such as a driver's license or a passport. And if you don't have something, two forms of non-photo ID. And the test fee is still $15. Back to net, W2JK.
And if you're a first licensee, you need your Social Security number, right?
W2JK. Well, the thing is, you don't have when you upgrade, when you receive your first license, your license has an FRN number on it. And that is what you will put on that blank in the 605 form when you are upgrading. If you do not have a license, you obviously don't have an FRN number. So you will put in your Social Security number or some other taxpayer's identification number, which I've never gotten involved with, but most people I've dealt with have had Social Security numbers. Now, I do know that you can go before the exam and get an FRN number, but I would say that's not really necessary. But I think only one person in all the people that tested ever did that. With that fact in that, W2JEK.
Very good, Don. Thank you very much. Any other comments on that subject or questions?
KC2BRY, what time is that test session next week?
The time it starts at 7 p.m. and we'll be there at least 8 o'clock. Over.
Okay, anybody else?
K2ZULU Charlie.
Go ahead, Dave.
For Tony's information, I have those tubes for him if he needs them.
K2AMY, did you catch that?
Hey, Dave, thank you very much. I will not make coffee this Friday, but there's a possibility. Of course, I'll make Kit Night next week, and sometimes I make Tuesday coffee. Put it in the car, and when we hook up, it'll be soon enough.
Okay, that's one each, 6BE6 and 6BA6.
Roger on that.
Okay, we'll probably see you at Kid Night then. This is K2ZC.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Tony, very good. Thank you, Dave, as well. Any other comments about tubes and miscellaneous other goodies, our activities?
I didn't hear you mention anything yet about the up-and-coming ham fest in your area there.
We'll get to that. That's good, Tony. Thank you. Just want to emphasize that in addition to Kid Night, which is also at Westwood High School in Washington Township, is also on Tuesdays and Fridays. Right, Tuesdays and Fridays, guys gather around 8:30 at the food court upstairs at Paramus Park for coffee. So that's always another adventure. We also have a 440 net
on Friday nights, probably on Thursday nights, at 8:30, just before this net, on 444-100, repeater of the Bergen County FM Association. On Monday night, we have on 28-375, upper sideband, we have a 10-meter net. And then we have on Wednesday night, we have, oh, pardon me, also on Monday night, man, I'm going to get killed for this, 8 o'clock, we have the YL net on 146.79 for the young ladies, Barra Babes, they call themselves. And then on Wednesday night, we have a chat net on 146.79, just a general informational net. That's a lot of fun. That, I think, concludes that. Our next meeting is the first Sunday of April. It will be a meeting at the Red Cross. We gather around 7 o'clock for coffee and yummies, and then we get down to business a little after 7:30. And I'm sure there will be a program announcement soon. I'm not sure what that is. And then let me see if there's any questions about that before we go on. Comment, go. Station with a comment. Try one more time. I'm going to go in the input. I barely got it. That was Rachel. Thank you, Rachel. The coffee is 8 a.m. Thank you very much. Alrighty. The next thing Tony alluded to before was actually this Saturday first. Before I get to what Tony alluded to, we have there's a Reese's meeting over at the. What do you call it, at the, let's see, was it Karlstad OEM, Sun Chemical Building, and I think that meeting starts sharply at 10 o'clock, will be done before noon or 1, certainly, and it'll be a county RACI symposium, so if you're interested in MCOM of any kind, feel free to come, and Ron Bosco will be happy to point you to either people involved in your municipality or get you to be the person involved in your municipality in RACES and other MCOM around the county. Another reminder to get everybody's batteries all squared away. I know Bob's good about that. Bob Javits, V2AIU, reminds everybody, but I'll remind everybody. We're talking about a lot of rain, so get your batteries get ready, get your flashlights going. We're talking about wind on Saturday as well as flooding waters. Make sure you know where your rain gear is. You can go out and be standing in the rain if you want to go in and out of things. But get your dry boxes all squared away and be ready to rock and roll. Because I think this is very reminiscent of a few years ago, like 3 years ago now, around the same time. Reservoirs are high and 4 or 5 inch rain is predicted. And one other thing, Venture Crew 7373 will be running a breakfast at Hamfest on April 10th, which is the Saturday morning after Easter. You'll be able to get your breakfast starting about 7:30 in the morning. It's pancakes and sausage and oatmeal, oddly enough, instant oatmeal, various flavors. And I think coffee and juice and tea and things like that. Perhaps hot chocolate as well. We look forward to seeing guys there. What's great about it is you get a breakfast out of it one way or another. So there's value, and looks like we have a nice group of folks planning to come. So hopefully we'll see more of the guys there. It's indoors. There's a separate eating and display area, but they're in the same level. Everything's street level access. There's even covered access for unloading and loading, as well as ramps, so people who have mobility issues have no trouble getting in. It's a beautiful thing. Everything is flat, all on one happy level. Advanced sales are, I think, $5 a piece, and you can catch me offline with W2TTT at AWRL.net. If you're interested in getting tickets in advance, I can send you a flyer. And I think Phil Barber was kind enough to include that in his cover note for the Barrow Bulletin last Friday. So keep that in mind, and it's a lot of fun. The goal is to send a dozen or so scouts up to Newington for a tour of League headquarters and the Maxim station. They've never been there, and I think it'd be a lot of fun trying to encourage some upgrades, too. So, one other thing I just want to point out, that a bunch of guys, Joyce and George, have enrolled in the CERT course that the county's running, and they found that 8 of my scouts and 4 of my parents, including my wife, by the way, are taking the CERT course up at the county OEM, which is really, really, actually not the county OEM, the county Law and Public Safety Institute on Wednesday nights. That's all working out real well. And I understand the boys have been well behaved for 3 weeks, and every one except one of those boys has a ham license, which is kind of unusual. We're working on the last one, but it is kind of amazing, and so we'll look to get more. Anything else for anybody other and have announcements, please call K2BAR. Okey-doke. Well, emphasis, please get your batteries all squared away. I'm going to give a quick roll call to make sure that you don't have to answer, but I just want to let everybody know who is here. KO2OK, K2AMI, KC2SAV, KC2SQP, K2DSL, W2JEK, WE2R, NS2K, KC2PYB, K2ZO, HA4 Whiskey Delta, KB, W4 Kilo Bravo Foxtrot, KC2 Victor Romeo Yankee, NZ2K, and K2 Zulu Charlie, and of course yours truly, W2TTT. Did I miss anybody? That's an outstanding setup, everybody. I'm glad everybody had a good time. We had a good question and answer period tonight, and net ran a little over an hour, which is even better. Actually, an hour and 17 minutes I show. That's excellent. So I want to thank the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of their repeater, and just like we always thank the Bergen County FM Association for use of their repeaters as well. Encourage membership in both if you can. And of course, anyone's welcome to join Barra. Again, we meet on the first Sunday of the month at the Red Cross in Ridgewood on Godwin Avenue. Please come around 7 o'clock and join us and enjoy a lot of good fun. So 73, everybody, have a great evening. This is K2BAR, W2, Tango, turning the repeater to normal, for whatever that means, amateur radio use. Speaking of normal amateur radio use, hi, Andy.
I have a number for you.
Okay.
TM241 Alpha.
And let me guess, it's a 3-terminal regulator, it's programmable, and will accommodate how many amps?
It's a 2-meter transceiver, 50 watts, high power, 3 power levels. It's very much like all the rest of the radios, they all have the same kind of features. PL, of course. Now, I've had it for, 3 years, 4 years, something like that.
Okay, TM, which one now? I'm sorry.
TM241A.
Alrighty. That's very cool. Yeah, I'm somewhat interested in that, actually. I think that I'd make a great little radio for a new ham, so we'll talk offline.
Okay, well, nothing wrong with it. It works just fine. I bought this other radio, and I don't need, well, I bought two of the radios. I don't need three, put it that way. And, if I want that, I got the manual. No, I don't. I'm sorry, I don't have a manual. I'll keep looking. I should have it somewhere. But, everything else is there. So, thank you. And, like you've been busy tonight. By the way, lithium ion battery single cell of 3.1 volts. W2TTTK2ETN.
Yeah. I wasn't sure. I just stayed out of that conversation because I know there are some batteries that require, charging circuit. In fact, I have some of them. In fact, mine is, what is this? I have a lithium-ion battery, but it may be a different kind of lithium-ion battery. And it does have a charge circuit available, I mean, with it, but it's a little diminished compared to, in comparison to what, what they were talking about. In compared to what I wanted, mine don't have the capacity that they were rated for. Typical Chinese ratings, just enough to get your interest, not enough to be real.
Yeah, if you want a charging circuit, I suggest you look at Maxim. They make a number of chips that are battery chargers. I have one of them, but it's not the lithium polymer or lithium ion. It's nickel metal hydride and NiCad. They do make single chip chargers for lithium polymer, though, and lithium ion. So you might look into that. They give you free samples. They're very, very generous with the samples. You can probably get one or two from them for nothing. And, of course, data sheets and everything are available. It's Maxim.com. Let's see. There was somebody on your net that wanted the battery to retain its charge for a long period of time, and that would be lithium polymer, not lithium ion. Lithium polymer is much better. They've got a half-life of about 9 years, I think.
That was our good friend, Mr. Tony, K2AMI.
Okay, well, pass it on to him. To make a charger, if you get one of these Maxim chips, they require a few external components, but not many. A couple of resistors and capacitors or something like that. And they make good stuff, Maxim. And they're, as I say, they're very free with samples. So give them a call, ask them, or look it up on the internet. So I'll let you go. You probably want to go to bed. I guess you're tired. W2TTTK2ETN.
Yeah, there will be no late night staying in the shack and playing on this Thursday night. I'll tell you that right now. I'm just unpackaging some things that need to be played with at another time in the next few days, but not today. Absolutely, thank you. And yeah, I gotta find a bit of. I have a different power problem. I gotta find a way to chop 12 volts down to something a little above 6, so that. Or a little above 5, so that my 3-terminal regulator won't cook off. The other thing I need to do is find some decent 10th-ohm resistors to, perhaps, either that or a bigger regulator. So I think I'm coming close to the 1-amp requirement of the 3-terminal regulator, so cooling notwithstanding, it's still kind of pushing the hairy edge, so I need to find a 3-terminal regulator that will give me or a way to get the 3-terminal regulator to be a little less hot by lowering the input voltage and by either balancing a pair of them or by getting a bigger one.
The JEK?
Head Doc.
You have a 317T, I think that's a variable regulator.
A 317T is not only variable, but also is an amp and a half, right?
I think so. That's what I was thinking.
might be what you need. It has a little more cuts to it. You could set it at the 5 volts, or put the put them in tandem. Put it in, drop you use that as a drop as a first as a, instead of a resistor or something. You can use that as a first drop. Let's say drop 12 down to 6, and then you run the 6 volts into your 7805. That way the 7805 wouldn't like run trying to get knock 12 volts down.
Not a bad idea, but I still need to, I think, get more than 1 amp of capacity at the 5 volt level. But that's a good idea. Andy?
Yeah, they make a 3 ampere regulators, but you're going to have to keep them cool. It doesn't matter what the thing will handle. It's the temperature you got to worry about. So that's, I think, your main problem is keeping it cool.
I can get more aluminum on it. That's easy enough.
Would like it very much. You can drive external power transistors, too. The other station, I think, mentioned the one with the regulator. If you need more current than the regulator is good for, then just use it to drive a pass transistor.
Yeah, that's your neighbor, Don. He's down in River Edge, but yeah. All right, very good. We can do that. My problem is I was doing this in a rush with whatever I could find kicking around, and you know how that is. It's kind of limiting sometimes.
Well, give Max some look at their webpage, and I think you'll probably find lots of battery charger chips. They have quite a few of them, and they make good stuff. I gotta go. You gotta go. W2TDT and whoever else is in there, K2ETN.
All right, Andy. Thank you very much, sir. And I'll be in touch with you over the weekend about your Radidio. Figure out what makes best sense. K2ETN. And W2JEK to take it before I go. W2TDT.
Okay, Gordon. K2ETN and W2TTT, W2JEK, not much else here, so good luck in the 73s for tonight. W2JEK going clear. Good night.
Night-night. Well, when you see what I've done, you'll see why I've done it. I did it. I basically took a Sirius radio head with a very trim docking station thing that they have for it, mounted it on a box that has other things in it, including ferrite to make sure that, you know, things are nice and clear, and it, you know, stereo amplifier. And so the output of the head, the Sirius head, feeds this thing, and let me tell you, it sounds gorgeous. I've got two Insignia speakers that were $3 a pair, and it just sounds wonderful. It really does. And at the auction the other day, I bought a box of 5K audio tape for slide pots. So my next thing is going to be building a resistive mixer. Once I solve this power problem, my next thing is a resistive mixer so that I can have multiple inputs and balance them out any which way I want. So that's going to be neat, too. All right, boys, 73, W2JEK, K2ETN already signed, W2TTT, Godspeed.
K2ZC disconnected. Thank you.